I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
You agree that on more than one occasion you improperly used your parliamentary resources and your position as a Member of Parliament to gain a benefit for yourself and persons close to you?
I'd agree.
The New South Wales Independent Commission Against Corruption, or ICAC, has been investigating the former MP for Wagga Wagga, Darren Maguire, looking at whether he improperly used his public office for personal gain.
Were you in a close personal relationship with Ms. Berejiklian?
Yes.
Are you still in a close personal relationship with Ms. Berejiklian?
Not after the events of this, I wouldn't be. No.
Late last year, while giving evidence to ICAC, then-Premier Gladys Berejiklian revealed that she was in a secret personal relationship with Maguire during the period the commission was investigating. And then, just last month, ICAC announced that this investigation would expand to include the conduct of Berejiklian and whether she broke the law by failing to report reasonable suspicions of corruption or breached public trust in the awarding of certain grants. Berejiklian insisted she had done nothing wrong. Nevertheless, the Premier resigned.
Resigning at this time is against every instinct in my being and something which I do not want to do. I love my job and I love serving the community.
Now, over an explosive 2 days of hearings, Gladys Berejiklian has fronted this inquiry. Today, the former New South Wales Premier takes the stand. It's Thursday, the 4th of November. Okay, Mick, can we start with you telling us what in particular Gladys Berejiklian was fronting ICAC for?
So the ICAC is looking at two key things.
Michael McGowan is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
The first is whether she breached the public trust by exercising her public duties in a situation where she had a private conflict because of her relationship with Maguire. And to look at that, the ICAC examined two grants, one a $5.5 million grant given to the Australian Clay Target Association in 2017, and the other, a $30 million grant given to the Riverina Conservatorium of Music in 2018, both of those in Maguire's seat in Wagga Wagga. The second part of the investigation is, did she fail to report corrupt conduct in circumstances where she, you know, reasonably should have suspected corrupt conduct was going on?
So, Mick, I know that for much of this time period that ICAC is looking at, Berejiklian was New South Wales Treasurer until she became Premier in January 2017. I also know that previous ICAC hearings revealed Berejiklian was in a relationship with Maguire between 2015 and 2018, and they also played some very revealing phone calls between the two. But I'm wondering if you can remind me, what had Berejiklian said on the public record about this whole affair before she took the stand last week?
Gladys Berejiklian has consistently denied any wrongdoing. She's framed her only mistake as a in quotation marks, personal one, and insisted that she's never done anything wrong.
I want to be very clear. In all the decisions I have ever made as a minister or as Premier of New South Wales, my first consideration has always been the well-being and welfare of the people of this state. I state categorically, I've always acted with the highest level of integrity. History will demonstrate that I've always executed my duties, again, with the highest level of integrity for the benefit of the people of New South Wales, who I have had the privilege to serve.
As the leader, but over 2 days, last Friday and this Monday.
Berejiklian, do you wish to take an oath or make an affirmation?
I take the oath, please.
Please listen to the hearing officer.
That was raked over in great detail by the counsel assisting the ICAC, Scott Roberts.
Ms. Berejiklian, please listen very carefully to the explanation I'm about to give you. As a witness, you must answer all questions truthfully and produce any item described.
Watching the ICAC over the last 2 and a bit weeks was kind of like watching the opening montage to the Brady Bunch over and over again. where it's like a four split screen.
If you have a look near the number 30.
With Council Assisting Scott Robertson.
To your right, there's a larger screen that might make life a little bit easier, Ms. Berger-Klint. Just the larger screen in front of you, mum.
It's actually not active.
You know, Gladys Berger-Klint in the stand.
It's very small. I can't read that. Yeah.
The Commissioner, Ruth McColl.
We usually need to turn that screen on.
It's larger now, thank you. Yeah.
And then the other lawyers sort of in the background.
Sort of assisting in IT support, apparently. Do you see now on the larger screen?
Mm-hmm.
And the number 30 towards the left-hand side of the page.
Let's dig into what we found out from Gladys Berejiklian at this hearing. And I want to start with this grant funding at the heart of this whole investigation. Maybe let's start with the Clay Target Association. I mean, can you break down what is that? What is Gladys Berejiklian's relationship to that?
Yeah, like I never thought that I would spend a lot of time thinking about the Australian Clay Target Association, but essentially they are the group in Australia who are responsible or, I guess, oversee clay target shooting.
So that's like you throw up a clay plate, you shoot it in the air is what I'm imagining.
Clay pigeons, I think they're called.
Okay.
I think they're essentially little orange discs. I've never shot one. It sounds kind of fun. I don't know. In 2017, the Australian Clay Target Association gets a $5.5 million grant. Now, it's for a new clubhouse and convention centre in Wagga Wagga. And the ICAC had previously heard that Maguire, through a business partner, had potentially sought a small commission from that project. So the ICAC heard that Darryl Maguire had been pushing variations of this grant for quite a few years, but they'd never gone anywhere, basically because public officials in the Office of Sport and in Treasury didn't think that it was a priority.
Hmm.
It was never seen as like a high priority proposal. It got a submission to fund it, got knocked back at one point. But then all of a sudden in late 2016, it becomes this urgent priority that goes to an expenditure review committee, which is like a powerful sub-cabinet committee in government, which is chaired by the treasurer, which again was Berejiklian.
Well, why did you indicate support in relation to this item?
I suspect the same reason that every other member of the Expenditure Review Committee provided support, in that it was regarded as a project which would raise our stocks in the regions and would also demonstrate to the community that we were cognizant of providing jobs and tourism opportunities.
I just want to understand what I'm not so concerned about what other members of the committee might have thought. Why were you supporting this particular item, as you recall it?
So at ICAC, one of the key focuses of the council assisting, Scott Robertson, was why did this all of a sudden become such a priority?
And I should also say Mr. Robertson, top of mind would have been at that time, the Orange by-election and potential repercussions on that front.
So what is she saying here, Mick?
Berejiklian in the stand explains that having lost the Orange by-election in 2016 to the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party.
I distinctly recall that.
The New South Wales government were terrified about losing the support of regional and rural voters.
And I distinctly recall the need to demonstrate to rural and regional communities that the New South Wales coalition government had not abandoned them in the face of a number of issues which they were concerned with and that which they assumed that we had turned our back on the bush.
And she says, based on her recollection, that she may have wanted to fund something relating to shooting or in a regional area to help the coalition win back those voters in the bush.
That's a quite unusual statement for the former Premier to have said.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't the only sort of, I guess, unusual defence for a politician to mount. So the second grant that is the focus of the ICAC's inquiry was $20 million from the Regional Communities Development Fund for a recital hall facility for the Riverina Conservatorium of Music, which is also Wagga Wagga.
Mm.
This is, we're talking about a year later, Berejiklian's now the Premier. She's still on the committee that helps to give out these grants. And at the hearing, she's shown a letter from her office to John Barilaro, who, as the Deputy Premier, was meant to be overseeing that fund, guaranteeing the Conservatorium project $20 million as part of the Wagga Wagga by-election that was prompted by Darryl Maguire's resignation in 2018. Berejiklian, she says she made a high-level strategic decision to fund the project. She argued, you know, that the decision would help the community, improve the prospects of the Liberal candidate in the Living by-election.
You didn't actually care about the detail of the proposal because you took the view that the appropriate course to win the Wagga by-election was to just throw money at Wagga.
Well, I wouldn't say just throw money, but it's a regular political activity that governments try to win seats, try to keep their seats, as do opposition. So I don't think it's a surprise to anybody in and around government to know that we threw money at seats in order to keep them.
In her defence in ICAC, she's kind of blatantly stating that the money for these projects was to win seats. That's a pretty big statement for a politician to make. You don't really hear something that blatant very often.
Okay, let's sort of just add the caveat that Berejiklian also said she believed these projects were of, you know, genuine community benefit. She talked about the need for arts and culture in the bush, for example. But yes, what she's essentially saying is she supported funding these projects because she was A, worried about the government losing the support of regional voters, and B, wanted to hold on to those voters in the Wagga Wagga by-election.
Mm.
I guess, yeah, it's kind of the curtain being removed, right? Like you're seeing behind the curtain of what governments are really thinking when they're making these decisions. It's interesting though, because during the inquiry, you have this really strange tension going on where Berejiklian is saying this about these projects, but the other witnesses that are still current ministers, so for example, Stuart Ayres or the former Premier, Mike Baird, and the recently resigned Deputy Premier, John Barilaro, are sort of all insisting, no, we didn't think about, you know, the threat of the shooters or you know, holding on to regional seats. We were just doing this because they seemed like good projects. So there's an interesting tension in the evidence that was being given there.
So on these two funding projects that are at the heart of this hearing, her defence is, oh, well, I funded them because I wanted to win the next election, essentially. What else did we find out at these hearings?
Well, a key part of the hearings as well was whether Maguire had more access to Berejiklian as a result of their relationship than a normal sort of backbench MP. And she insisted that he didn't. But it wasn't only on these particular projects that he was lobbying Berejiklian. So we discovered that he was also calling her about other big ticket items in the state budget.
Tell me about these other big ticket items that Maguire was speaking to her about.
Right. So May 2018, we hear about a series of texts and calls between Berejiklian and Maguire that are played during the hearing, because remember, Maguire's phone is tapped, about getting money for Wagga Wagga Hospital. By this time, remember, she's the Premier. Now, Maguire texts Berejiklian complaining that staff in the office of then-Treasurer Dominic Perrottet had told him that there was no money for stage 3 of Wagga Wagga Hospital, which he said needs $170 million. There's a call then where he relays his frustrations and his conversations with Perrottet's staff.
So, well, you better make sure Wagga's got money, otherwise there's going to be a riot on money.
I'll deal with
it. Let's do it right.
I'll fix it.
Sorry to add these people, honest to Christ.
I'll fix it.
2 hours later, there's another call and Berejiklian's telling Maguire that she's spoken to Perrottet and that the money has been sorted.
There's no money for it, and there's no money for the new school in the cellar. I'm going to have a fucking terrible time at the election. Just a terrible time.
Well, I've already got you the Wagga Hospital.
But so they should have done it.
I know. I just spoke to Dom and I said, just put the 140 in the budget. He goes, no worries. He just, that's what I asked him to do.
It's meant to be 170.
He's putting it in whatever it is, okay?
I mean, that would cause, we would lose Wagga. We would fucking will lose. And we would lose. I tell you now, they would campaign like you wouldn't believe, and we'd have nothing to defend ourselves with a hole in the ground. Well, what is wrong with these people? I've been to them. They asked me for the list. He said, okay, what's your list?
Please not get yourself worked up again, because all you do is shout at me sometimes, Hockey.
I can't believe they left Wagga Hospital off there. What is wrong with them?
I've just fixed that one. I can't fix everything else, but I've got that one on for you.
I mean, this is an incredibly revealing phone call, Mick. A Premier speaking to her then secret boyfriend, a sitting MP, saying that she got him millions of dollars of funding for a hospital in his electorate. What did Berejiklian have to say about this phone call?
The effect of what we've just heard, this, that you fix it by taking steps to have the budget papers changed. Is that how we read those two exchanges?
Not at all. I wouldn't read that. That would have been impossible to do.
When she was pushed by Robertson, she said that wasn't the case.
The project was already ready to go unless there'd been a lot of discussion within government already. You can't just add items in like that. There would have been a process behind that, and I envisage Mr. Maguire was referring to that process.
So she said it was a pre-existing line item, which means it was already committed to, and essentially what she might have been doing was asking for it to be spelled out in the budget that that money was being allocated. So it was a specific, identified item in the budget papers that everyone could see.
Now, we should note here that the current New South Wales Premier, Dominic Perrottet, who was Treasurer at the time, has since commented on this issue of the hospital funding, and he says that this $170 million was already in the budget before Berejiklian reached out.
If it was not Mr. Maguire but someone else making the same telephone call to you, as he appears to have done on the 16th of May 2018, you would have taken exactly the same steps as you apparently did on that afternoon.
Yes, I'm confident I would have.
She also said it was something that she would have approved regardless of who was making the call. She said that if she got a call from an irate backbencher about a spending item that should have been in the budget, she would have stepped in to fix it.
Whatever action I did or didn't take would be similar to what I did for any other colleague.
Was she pushed on that idea at all, that she would have acted similarly if she'd gotten that call from any other MP?
Yeah, he absolutely did.
But does it follow from that that you deny the proposition that Mr. Maguire had more access to you than other backbenchers or parliamentary secretaries?
In terms of fighting for their electorates or fighting for their communities, I would regard that all of my colleagues had equal access, including Mr. Maguire.
That means you deny the proposition that Mr. Maguire had more access to you than other backbenchers or parliamentary secretaries?
Yes.
All of this is happening while Gladys Berejiklian is in a relationship with Darren Maguire that she has not disclosed. I mean, isn't that a problem?
That kind of depends on who you ask, I guess. So Berejiklian says no, and she was at pains to explain how she kept both her relationship and her public duties separate. Plus, she put forward the argument that she's used before that the relationship wasn't that serious.
Yeah, but the overwhelming consideration was that this was a matter relating to the electorate, to public office, to the community. It had nothing to do with what was happening in my private life.
Does that mean it was a factor or not a factor?
About the significance of the relationship.
Correct.
I don't think I would have taken that into account because it wasn't something that I thought I needed to declare.
And does that stand up to scrutiny at ICAC, that the relationship was not that serious?
There was a lot of, really interesting evidence about that.
Next, Berejiklian and the love circle. So, Mick, what else do we learn at this ICAC hearing about Berejiklian's relationship with Maguire?
He revealed that the two were in love with each other. They discussed getting married, having children. They'd holidayed together. He had a key to her home. Some kind of what you might think were markers of a relationship.
I don't want to diminish the strength of feeling I had for him. And I don't want to diminish that in any way. I had very strong feelings for him, but I didn't feel the relationship was at a stage where I would introduce him necessarily to my parents or my sisters or need to declare it, but I don't want to underscore what I felt. But I didn't always feel that was reciprocated and I didn't feel a level of commitment.
During her evidence, Berejiklian's asked about this. She doesn't dispute anything that Maguire says, but she introduces the concept of the love circle.
I regarded him as a part of my love circle, part of people that I strongly cared for, but I wouldn't have put him in the same category as my parents or my sisters.
Then...
521. I'm going to go, please, to the last page of that exhibit.
We're shown a text message.
Last page of that exhibit, please.
From April 2018.
On the very same day, you're saying to Mr. Maguire...
You are my family.
Did you say that there?
I do.
Which is the same day that she's part of the expenditure review committee that signs off on the initial $10 million for the Riverina Conservatorium of Music.
How can you possibly say that the relationship was not of sufficient status to consider making a disclosure with respect to it, when on the very same day you're telling Mr. Maguire that he's your family?
Right, so that would indicate a pretty close definition by Gladys's own words of her relationship with Maguire around the time that she's making some pretty pivotal decisions. What did she say about this evidence when it was put forward in the hearing?
She said that...
Well, that's a turn of phrase, but I did not mean it in the context that I regarded him as family, especially...
And not something that she meant to be taken literally. She said that he wasn't her family in the legal sense.
Not in the legal sense, no.
At one point, Scott Roberts said, so when you say you are my family...
What, you didn't mean you are my family? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, it was a turn of phrase, but I certainly did not regard that as literal. It was my...
And interestingly, you know, in the inquiry, she doubled down.
Ms. Berejiklian, if you were able to have your time again...
She was asked by Scott Robertson, you know, with the benefit of hindsight...
Would you disclose your close personal relationship with Mr. Maguire to your ministerial colleagues or any of them?
I didn't feel it was of sufficient standard or sufficient significance in order to do that.
And she said no.
So does that mean the answer to my question is no?
I would not have.
Right, so there's all this talk about love circle, in the circle, are you in the family, are you not in the family, but it all comes down to whether she broke any rules, right, whether she breached any ministerial codes by not declaring this relationship. Did that become clear in the hearing?
A key part of the whole inquiry is whether Berejiklian breached the ministerial code of conduct by failing to disclose this relationship. It's that whole thing of did she break the trust by exercising public duties but she had a private interest.
Mm.
Now, one of the things that was examined during the whole two-week inquiry with every witness that came through was, should she have disclosed the relationship, and would you, as, you know, like another minister or a public servant, have acted differently if you had known about the relationship when dealing with these grants? Now, every single witness said... Yeah, I probably would have did things a little bit differently. Berejiklian says, well, they weren't in my shoes. They don't know what was in my mind. I kept things separate. It was never an issue for me.
Mick, so everything that we've spoken about so far kind of relates to Berejiklian's decisions over funding, ones that she was looking at directly. But what about the failure to report corrupt conduct of others, like Maguire? What did they find out about that in these hearings?
So we heard a number of phone taps and we heard a number of them both last year when Berejiklian was first in the witness stand and then in the last 2 weeks. At the centre of them is Maguire talking about a series of deals that he's hoping to make money from. Now, one of the key phone taps from last year is Maguire telling Berejiklian that he's hoping to wipe off a $1.5 million personal debt from a land deal at Badgerys Creek, where the new Western Sydney Airport is being built. So in this original phone tap, we hear Maguire ask Berejiklian, you know, can you believe that I'm about to wipe off my debt? And she says, I can believe it, or worse to its effect.
And what explanation has she given as to why she didn't report Maguire when what he's talking about here is using his position in Parliament to make money on the side?
Well, when she's been asked about it, both at the first hearing and in the most recent ones, she's basically said, look, I wasn't really listening to him when he was talking. He talked a lot. He, you know, had a lot of plans. None of them really came off. They weren't interesting to me. You know, she was like, kind of like bored is what she has said. But then this time we also hear another tape.
You sound very excited in your voice. What's happened today?
Oh, what's happened?
This one is from a 52-minute conversation that the two of them have on the day that Darren Maguire first gets his summons to appear before the ICAC on the 5th of June, 2018.
What happened was I've been subpoenaed to go to ICAC, summons to ICAC. So that's exciting.
And in this phone call, Farah Jicklin is definitely not bored. She's definitely listening.
What?
Yeah.
What for?
Because she wants to know why this guy who is, you know, both her boyfriend and a member of her government has been called to appear before ICAC.
So is there anything to worry about?
No.
Oh, good.
No. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've never accepted a dollar, never done a deal, you know.
So why are you being subpoenaed?
Well, I'm being summoned as a witness.
So she's asking very pointed questions here to Maguire about what's going on, showing that she is paying attention.
Absolutely. She wants to know, you know, has he done anything wrong, for one? Is he a witness or is he a focus of the investigation?
All right. And what to prove what?
Well, who knows? I think that her what was to benefit from the skullduggery was getting up to the council.
I don't want to know any of that stuff.
But nobody knew. Nobody knew.
These guys who are the subject of this, what is a separate investigation at the time, she calls them dodgy, these people that Maguire is associating with. And at one point in the call, Maguire rails against the ICAC.
It's worse than the Spanish Inquisition.
He calls them, you know, worse than the fucking Spanish Inquisition.
You know, the people can't even talk anymore.
And he says to her,
you know, they could be taping your conversation with me right now.
To which she responds,
is that going to be a problem?
Why? What have you done?
Nothing.
Correct.
I don't even know these people. But I'm just saying, like, what if you...
But I'm just saying to you, that's the power that you know, these organisations have.
So this would seem to imply a fairly active understanding that Maguire was in trouble, being investigated, that his phone calls might be tapped on the part of Farah Jicklin.
Well, you might think so, but Farah Jicklin says that she trusted Maguire.
Well, as at the time of this conversation, did you suspect that Mr. Maguire may have been engaged in corrupt conduct?
No, I do not. And if I had, I would have reported it.
When she's saying this during the hearings on Friday and Monday, both Scott Robertson, the counsel assisting, and Ruth McColl, the commissioner of the ICAC, are essentially asking, are you not at this point starting to put some things together? You've got this other phone call where he's talking about the $1.5 million deal. There are other calls where he talks about you know, various business associates. Ruth McColl asked Farah Jicklin, did you not think it was curious that all this was happening?
I don't know how I'd be expected to make any joining of the dots which don't exist in this case.
Did you not suspect him at any point? And Farah Jicklin insists that she didn't.
Again, I'm only speculating. I can't recollect what I thought at that time. But suffice to say, I was not concerned because he told me there was nothing to be concerned about and I trusted him.
She says that when he talked to her about, you know, the $1.5 million, she wasn't listening. She didn't pay any attention. She didn't remember it happening. When it comes to this later phone call, she says, well, he told me he hadn't done anything wrong. And I asked him, he told me, I trusted him, I believed him. She was asked, well, why didn't you just report this conversation? Yeah, okay. And she said, it's because I didn't know anything. I had no information to give to the ICAC. So I didn't think that I needed to.
Good afternoon, everybody. As I said, the last month has been an extremely difficult one, and I just want to thank the public for their amazing support. And I stand by what I've always said, that every decision I made in terms of the public office I held was in the best interests of the community and the public. I stand by that today, stronger than ever. And now I intend to get on with my life. And I just again want to thank everybody for their support.
So, Mick, the hearings are over, and I'm wondering what could happen from here, especially in regards to Gladys Berejiklian.
So what happens now is all the various lawyers, including counsel assisting, make written submissions to the commissioner, Ruth McColl. She reads them, she goes over the evidence, she writes a report, and we get the report. Now, well, in its final report, the ICAC can and may make findings of corrupt conduct. And, you know, in serious cases, it can also recommend that the New South Wales Director of Public Prosecutions consider criminal charges against particular people. So it's quite possible that this could get, you know, even more serious from here.
That was Michael McGowan, a reporter at Guardian Australia. You can read his extensive coverage of the ICAC hearings at theguardian.com. Plus, we put some links to that on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater, Karishma Luthria and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. Mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Muttignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and myself, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.